Thank you, dear Lord. There was no inspection when we entered here. Thank you for all the women here in this room who will meet you in these pages. Yes, agreed, Betsy. Thank you for the very crowding here. Since we're packed so close, that many more will hear. She looked at her sister expectantly and prodded, Corey. Oh, all right. Thank you for the jammed, crammed, stuffed, packed, suffocating crowds. Thank you, Betsy continued serenely, for the fleas and for, and that was at the point at which Corey interrupted her. She cut in, Betsy, there is no way even God can make me thankful for a flea. Give thanks in all circumstances, Betsy corrected. It doesn't say in pleasant circumstances. Fleas are a part of this place where God has put us. So they stood between the stacks of bunks, gave thanks for fleas, though on that occasion, Corey thought Betsy was wrong. And like somebody used to say, let me tell you the rest of the story. As the weeks passed, Betsy's health weakened to the point that rather than having to go out on work duty each day, she was permitted to remain in the barracks and knit socks together with other seriously ill prisoners. She was a lightning fast knitter, usually had her daily stock quota completed by noon. As a result, she had hours each day she could spend moving from platform to platform, reading the Bible to her fellow prisoners. She was able to do this undetected because the guards never seemed to venture very far into the barracks. One evening, when Corey arrived back at the barracks, Betsy's eyes were twinkling. You're looking extraordinarily pleased with yourself, Corey said. You know, we've never understood why we had so much freedom in this big room, Betsy said, referring to the part of the barracks where the sleeping platforms are. Well, I found out. This afternoon, there was confusion in my knitting group about sock sizes, so we asked the supervisor to come and settle it, but she wouldn't. She wouldn't step through the door, and neither would the guards. Do you know why? Betsy could not keep the triumph from her voice as she exclaimed, because of the fleas. That's what she said. That place is crawling with fleas. Corey's mind raced back to their first hour in the barracks. She remembered Betsy bowing her head and thanking God for creatures that Corey could see no use for. 1 Thessalonians 5, 14 through 18, an incredible passage. And I will admit, one that I have some trouble with, and I think I've learned something from reading this passage from Corrie ten Boom's book, The Hiding Place. If you have a chance, it's not deep reading. You won't have to take notes as you're reading it, but if you get a chance, it's a good book to read. I think I've learned something. So this morning, I want to think about Thanksgiving. Before we do, let's give thanks to God, and then we'll continue. God, we're so thankful that you give us this place and this time that we can be together and we can learn about you. We can express our appreciation to you for all that you do. God, we don't always see the end of the matter, but we know that you take care of us. We know that you sort out the changes in our lives that are appropriate to us, and we thank you for that. We thank you for not giving us everything that we'd like to have, because some of the things that we'd like to have, you know, would be good for us. So we give you thanks for everything that you do. Will you be with us now and help us to understand more of these things? Jesus said he would bring our prayers to you and express them to you in the most appropriate way, and we ask him to do that for us now. Amen. So let's look at some biblical information about Thanksgiving. While we do that, has anybody else had that kind of a situation arise in their life where something happened and you were sure that this was not for the good and you were having trouble giving thanks to God for it? Anybody at home? I've never been in a concentration camp like that. I've never been in those dire circumstances. But I was thankful for a forest fire one time because I was lost in the woods. And I saw the smoke and started walking toward the smoke. And I found the guys that were working to put the forest fire out. That's how I got out of the woods. I was pretty much turned around. A lot worse than Abe Lincoln said. I was a mite distracted for 3 days one time. But I was pretty much lost. Anybody else? Well, let's look at some of the passages.
Hey, Dean?
Yeah.
I think, sometimes, somebody like myself struggles with health problems. A lot of times, something painful or uncomfortable will happen. I wonder, why do I have to suffer through this? And then I talk to somebody else that has something worse. Not that I revel in their thing. For instance, I have a condition that has affected my balance. But that same condition, the doctor was telling me, has affected somebody's eyesight, and they lost their eye for the same thing. So then I'm thankful, maybe I should be thankful for losing my balance. Because if it had gone to the other side of my face, I would have lost part of my eyesight.
Yeah, that, who among us hasn't had something happen that caused us to radically change our diet and actually pay attention to what we were eating and pay attention to getting exercise? And in the long run, it turned out to be a good thing. I know it's happened to me. I've told you before, my diet was awful. My lunch was a family pack of Oreo cookies and a half a gallon of milk. And then I had a heart attack and thankfully decided to change my diet. And like you were saying, and Ron being in the hospital. And I talked to Ron. He's still just as mean and nasty as he was before. But maybe this is a wake-up call, and he needs to pay a little closer attention to things. Yeah, Carol.
Sometimes you don't see the providence of God, why things flow one way or another. Sometimes you see them fairly quickly. Sometimes you don't see them for a long time. And when my brother was dying and sick up in Portland, before we left, he wanted me to go get him this particular dessert, which, of course, we knew he probably wouldn't have more than one bite, but things were always better in his head than what they were. And that was the year that they had the field burning down here, and 100 cars got in an accident, about 20 people died, and we were about 20 minutes to half an hour after that. which would have put us maybe right in the middle of it. So,
yeah.
I mean, not that I didn't want to get him his treat, but the providence of God sometimes shows up soon, sometimes later.
And I can't say that that was God deciding that you needed to go get the treat because God didn't want you to get in there. I can't say that. But, yeah, you know, sometimes it's like the Apostle Paul when he wrote back to Philemon about his slave Onesimus that had run away. Can you imagine Onesimus looking at the situation? He's run away, figures he'll go to Rome because that's a good place to hide. You know, big city, he can get lost in the crowd, and has the misfortune of running into his old master's best friend. And then Paul converted him. Now, did he run away so Paul could convert him? I have no idea. And when Paul writes to Onesimus or to Philemon, he doesn't say, I know that's why. He says, maybe, perhaps. It's like Mordecai told Esther. You know, he said, Esther, you got to go talk to the king because he has this edict that he's going to kill all the Jews. And Esther says, wait a minute, I don't just go talk to the king. I mean, if I walk in unbidden, if he holds his hand one way, I get to go sit by him and talk to him. And if he holds his hand the other way, it's off with her head. And Mordecai has this fantastic response. He says, who knows, Esther? Maybe God put you in the kingdom for a time such as this. And if not, if you get your head lopped off, God will find some other way to save his people. But, yeah, I can't say for sure. Many times I can't say, I know. I can't say. I know that's why Dave has a balance problem. And I can't say, I know that's why I had a heart attack. But maybe. I can't discount it either. And I can't say, I know God didn't want you to be in that wreck, so he had you go get that treat. I can't say that. But I can't not be aware that God has a hand in taking care of us. Let's look at Ephesians 5. This is a passage that we read a lot, and we typically read it in terms of or with reference to singing when we come together in an assembly. This is not a passage that talks about assembly. It doesn't have anything to do with that. Let's read the passage, Ephesians 5. Look carefully then how you walk, not as unwise, but as wise, making the best use of the time, because the days are evil. Therefore, do not be foolish, but understand what the will of the Lord is. Do not get drunk with wine, for that's debauchery, but be filled with the Spirit, addressing one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing, making melody in your heart, giving thanks to God. Always and for everything, giving thanks to God the Father in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, submitting to one another out of reverence for Christ. This is every day. This passage, we read this passage all the time to talk about the way that we sing, a cappella singing in church, in our assembly. This passage doesn't have anything to do with assemblies. If anything, this passage would say, always, everywhere, sing a cappella. And we'd typically don't, we just ignore the context of this passage. This passage is saying, give thanks every day, always. And that's where we ought to be. Now, that's not to say that we ought to use instruments in our assemblies. Just point out that this passage doesn't talk about it. 1 Corinthians 14 does, but this passage doesn't talk about it. Okay? This is a passage about giving thanks, being filled with the Spirit instead of being filled with wine. So, Psalms 136, verse 26. Give thanks to the God of heaven, for his steadfast love endures forever. God is always the same. He never changes. He's not going to say, I love you this day, I'll take care of you this day, but tomorrow you're on your own, bud. Now, do we hurt him when we don't act as we should? Absolutely. Does God say you will have to endure punishment because you don't act the way that you should? Absolutely. God always loves us. And it's kind of like your mom and dad. They always love you. Sometimes they spank you, but they always love you. And so give thanks for that love. And you know, I'm no different than anybody else. My mom told me one time, this is going to hurt me more than it does you. I said, well, then why are we doing it? Because the purpose here is to hurt me. That was not a good response, by the way. In case any children are listening this morning, that is not a good response to your parent. Other thoughts? I think we sometimes accept everything that God does for us and we don't give thanks for it. I know I do. I sort of take it for granted. I mean, I rarely do I think about giving thanks because I got up this morning and I was able to greet another day. I just kind of take that for granted, that I'm going to wake up and I'm going to have my cup of coffee, take my shower, and I'm going to get down here to the office. Yeah, Carol.
I saw a thing the other day. It said, I know God still loves me even when he's silent.
Yep, that's true. That's true.
This is what that passage reminded me of.
That's true. Good point. Yeah, Vicki. Okay.
I don't think that's saying be thankful for the circumstance. I don't even know if that makes sense.
Oh, it makes absolute sense.
I don't see it. I feel like I'm looking at this differently, but maybe not. I just, no matter what circumstance I'm in, I'm always to give God thanks for everything. But it's not necessarily thankful for the circumstance. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes absolute sense. It's kind of like the Apostle Paul. He's in prison in Rome, and he says, I thank God that my imprisonment has fallen out to the furtherance of the gospel. Think about, you know, he's chained to a guard day and night, at least for part of his imprisonment. Then he was released, and he was kind of under house arrest, but at one point, he was chained to a guard. And his response was, good, I've got a captive audience. So you don't give thanks to for being chained to a guard. You give thanks for the for all the things that can happen based on that circumstance. Yeah, Linda. Sure. Sure. And we give thanks to God that he's there. What would it be like to live in a world of chaos where there was no order to the world? And I've thought about this in terms of the pandemic. You know, we've suffered a lot because of the pandemic. And I thought, you know, it's a good thing that God is there, because he sets down rules. Think what it would have been like to live through the bubonic plague when people didn't understand the rules about transmission of disease and that sort of thing. I mean, for years we labored under the impression that drinking foul water wasn't going to affect your health. I mean, in the Civil War, it sounds really crude, but they didn't even have a basic understanding of putting the latrine downstream from where you camped. They didn't even know that. And so they're living in a world that's just chaotic. It wasn't chaotic. God had some rules, but we didn't know what the rules were. And so you just, well, what happened to him? How come he got sick? I don't know. It's just his time. I give thanks for all of the things that medicine has learned and really, they're not discovering, they're not creating rules. They're just figuring out, hey, this is the way that works. Wow, that's cool. Yeah, John, you had a comment. When I was a school psych, I dealt with a lot of kids who lived in an environment that was chaotic. Can you imagine coming home from school every day, standing on the stoop, looking through the door to see if your dad was drunk that day? Because if he was drunk, he might throw something at you. I can't imagine what that's like. And I have often thought about some of those kids. If I had to grow up in that kind of a chaotic environment, I'd be a basket case. And those kids learn to adapt. And some of them become incredible people. But living in that kind of chaos, I can't imagine what that's like. I came home from school every day, and I knew that my mom would have a snack waiting for me. And we were very fortunate. My mom didn't work outside of the house. It's not to say she didn't work, but she didn't work outside of the house. And so I'd come home from school, and there were always warm cookies and milk. That's what started me on that Oreos and milk thing. I blame her for that. No, I'm just teasing. But, you know, I had such a blessed life. And I always wanted to be like my latchkey friends. They came home from school and got to do whatever they wanted to do because their mom had to go to work outside the house, and I wanted to be a latchkey kid. This is Psalms 106, verse 1. Praise the Lord, give thanks to the Lord for his good. His steadfast love endures forever. Who can utter the mighty deeds of the Lord or desire all of his praise? Blessed are they who observe justice, who do righteousness at all times. You know, I was trying to remember the phrase, there are more things. It's a Shakespeare phrase. There are more things in heaven and earth. Somebody's a Shakespeare fan. I'm not a Shakespeare guy. It was a statement that was made to Horatio and something about that. Anyway, the point is, most of us just go through life and it's as if we don't see what God is doing. We're just not making ourselves aware of everything that God is doing. And part of giving thanks is becoming aware. Other thoughts? People at home, I don't mean to ignore you. We're using the Corinthian model here. Just speak up. Psalms 100. I stole this one from Kim. Make a joyful noise to the Lord, all the earth. Serve the Lord with gladness. Come into his presence with singing. Know that the Lord, he is God. It is he who made us, and we are his. We are his people and the sheep of his pasture. Enter his gates with thanksgiving and his courts with praise. Give thanks to him. Bless his name. The Lord is good. His steadfast love endures forever, and his faithfulness to all generations. There's this recurring phrase in the book of Psalms. His steadfast love endures forever. So we give thanks to God because he's always there. And and we can count on him. And that's a big deal. That's a big deal. Knowing that God is there. Kim tells about being in an accident in 1988. She was driving the van. Mandy and Jenny were in the van. She rolled the van, got sideways on a gravel road in British Columbia, just north of Whitehorse. Or in the Yukon Territory, just north of Whitehorse. And the van rolled. Mandy came out, caught a flying ice chest in the middle of her chest and busted a bunch of ribs. Jenny got beat up something fierce. When I saw Jenny, her head was the size of a basketball. She was 3 years old. Just incredible to think that they survived everything that happened when that van rolled over. And somebody said the way the van got turned back over was there happened to be a group of six Mormon kids that were driving up the highway. They saw the accident, came running up, wanted to know what they could do to help. Kim thought that Mandy was trapped underneath of the vehicle. And they rolled the vehicle enough that they could see that there was no person underneath of the vehicle. It was a doll. And they did find Kim's Bible when they straightened the van up a little bit. And they asked her if she wanted her Bible, and she said, no, not right now. I already got that. I already know what that says. And that's a big part of this thankfulness that we have for God. You know, you typically don't learn thankfulness when you're going through a bad situation as your first response. And by that I mean, if you're not in the habit of acknowledging God when you get into the bad situation, that's not your fallback position. I acknowledge God. That's not a time for somebody to teach you to acknowledge God for the first time. It's something that you've been doing your whole life, and you just keep doing it then. And that's the way that we learn thankfulness. That's the way that I think David learned thankfulness. I mean, David didn't start praying when Saul was chasing him and had him cornered in the cave. David had been praying his whole life. Saul's got him cornered in the cave. David probably prayed. The record doesn't tell us whether he did or not. But when David faced down Goliath, that wasn't the first time that David ever said, you know, I'm going to have to rely on God in this situation. He'd been saying that his whole life. And so when he faced the dire circumstance, he just went back to what he's always done. You know, it's no different than, I've been around some people that just cuss up a storm. And when something bad happens, they break out the kind of language that they've been using their whole life. You revert to what you've been doing. You don't form a new habit right then and there. You revert to what you were. And yeah, that happens. People that come from that background, you know, you smash your thumb with a hammer, the first thing that's likely to come out of your mouth is not something that you've never said before. My sister hit her thumb with a hammer. It was so funny. She smashed her thumb something fierce, and she said, oh, cuss word. But when you smash your thumb with a hammer, you're likely to revert to past behavior. I'm a behaviorist. The best predictor of future behavior is past behavior. If you've been praying to God all your life and you smash your thumb with a hammer, you're probably going to pray, oh, goodness, Lord, this hurts. Please don't let my thumbnail come off. Yeah, Carol.
I think that when you mentioned David and King Saul and the cave, I think, you know, what would your first instinct be? Well, you want to get rid of this guy, but he's modifying his behavior, as you were talking about. And he takes a piece of cloth. Does he take it because he did it because he didn't want to kill him, but he wanted to know that he could have? Did he take it to prove it to Saul later? We never know. But he modified his behavior because he knew he shouldn't kill God's anointed.
Right. But I'm confident that wasn't the first time that David had thought about that. The record doesn't say that David fell back on his behavior, you know, the things that he'd been thinking about all this time. I just know that. I know that from my own life.
Yeah,
And, I wish I could say that when I've smashed my thumb, my first thought was prayer. That hasn't always been. Okay, we're running out of time here. Let's see. I think this is the last one that I have. First Timothy, the second chapter, verses 1 through 7. First of all, then, I urge that supplication, prayers, intercessions, and thanksgiving be made for all people, for kings and all who are in high positions, that we may lead a peaceable and quiet life, godly and dignified in every way. This is good. It's pleasing in the sight of God our Savior, who desires all people to be saved, to come to a knowledge of the truth. There's one God. There's one mediator between God and man, the man Jesus Christ, who gave himself as a ransom for all, which is the testimony given at the proper time. For this I was appointed a preacher and an apostle. I'm telling the truth. I'm not lying. A teacher of Gentiles in faith and truth. For Paul to be able to say, give thanks for and make prayer for all men, is a big statement. Paul has been subjected to awful beatings. He's been imprisoned, but he managed to give thanks. And I think there's a big lesson for us in all of this. I think Vicky makes a good point. I don't give thanks that I'm in prison. But remember what Paul said when he's making his defense. I would to God that you're like I am, that you would be like I am. Oh yeah, except for the chains. Let's be careful that we put God first. And be careful that we give thanks. Closing thoughts. Anybody from home? We're about out of time this morning.
Yeah, Dean, if I might quickly interject, just something that happened last night. I got a call from my precious Eugene daughter-in-law, and some guy had said something that just really upset her, and I first told her, I said, what I'd like to do is box his jaw. I said, but I need to go away for just a minute. So when I got back to her, I said, I did what God would want me to do as a Christian. I said, I prayed for this guy. I said, now, because she hasn't come to know the Lord. She hasn't been baptized or anything. I said, but I did what I was supposed to do in the sight of God. I said, I did pray for him. I said, and it's up to God what happens from here. I said, but I want you to know that is what is supposed to take place. I said, and I'm sorry that happened to you. And I said, I want you to have some peace. She said, I wasn't able to sleep last night. So I said, well, I want you to be able to sleep tonight. So I can hardly wait to talk to her to see how she's doing. I said, well, I hope and pray that you'll be able to sleep tonight. I said, but I did what I should do, you know.
That's a wonderful testimony. And I'm sure that that will have an impact on your daughter.
I pray so.
Wonderful testimony.